This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting with 96-year-old Lou Goodman of San Luis Obispo, California, originally from Los Angeles. His father died when Lou was just 2, 3 weeks before his brother was born. But you heard about the role his mother played in helping Lou get into the Army Air Corps. He would end up flying 30 missions as a B-17 bombardier with the 323rd Squadron of the 91st Bomb Group out of Bassingbourne, England. You heard him say he remembers encountering enemy aircraft on the majority of those 30 missions.
Oh, when you got over a target, there was always flak. They had flak surrounding all those aircraft factories and submarine factories. They had flak guns. And they could shoot a lot of flak at you. But as you approached, the enemy aircraft would approach you. And when you left, the enemy aircraft would follow, trying to shoot you down. So it was kind of hairy.
Well, I'm just imagining there had to be some of those missions where that stuff came pretty close to you.
It came very close several times. Several times that we came back with holes in our airplane. You could never fly the same airplane 2 missions in a row because when you come back from a mission, that aircraft you were in had to be grounded for a while they fixed all the holes. So you never flew the same airplane 2 missions in a row. You know, it came into the cockpit where I was. They came over where we were and would kick around for a while, you know. We were in dangerous territory. We were in war, for crying out loud. A lot of the guys didn't make it back, but we were at war. That's what war is all about. War is hell. War is hell.
Well, and you mentioned some guys didn't come back.
A lot of guys didn't come back. A lot of them.
When did that dynamic become real for you? When did that sink into you?
I think each time I took one for grain of salt. It could have been me. It wasn't me. Maybe next time it will be me. But you don't concentrate on it a lot. Mm-hmm. You missed them, but you just felt lucky it wasn't you that time. You live day by day, and you expected the worst. And when it didn't happen, you felt pretty doggone good. Yes, you did.
Well, let's talk about some of the worst.
Yeah.
I believe I heard you telling your friends at breakfast about a mission where you guys lost 2 engines.
Yes, we only had 2 engines.
Was that because you'd been shot up?
Yeah, it'd been either flak or enemy aircraft had killed 2 engines for us.
So you're trying to make it back
on 2 engines
to Bassingbourne, England.
Losing altitude.
And I've had a lot of guys who flew in the 8th Air Force in Europe talk about the White Cliffs of Dover.
Yep.
When they could see the White Cliffs of Dover, they knew they were almost back.
Yeah.
You guys almost didn't clear the White Cliffs of Dover.
When we made it over, I looked down out of my plastic glass seat. I saw a bird nest. I was that close to the top of that cliff.
Let's talk about before that.
Okay.
So you go and you drop your bombs.
Yeah.
You're coming back.
Yeah.
And you know that there's only 2 engines working.
Yeah.
And the pilot is communicating to the whole crew, right?
Yeah.
And there were also some crew members wounded on this mission?
Both waist gunners are badly shot up. Both waist gunners.
So you guys are in trouble.
We were in serious trouble.
You have 2 members of your 10-man crew are wounded.
Yeah.
The plane is flying on half its engines.
Yeah. Losing altitude.
So what's happening on that intercom? What's being said?
Well, first of all, when we decided we're going to stick with it, we started throwing everything overboard. I threw the bomb sight overboard. Very valuable bomb sight. I threw it overboard, trying to maintain as much altitude as we could.
But let's talk about that decision.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because every pilot, every plane captain knows those other lives depend on him.
Yeah.
And he's ultimately the guy who's going to have to make a decision and execute it. What did he communicate to the rest of you?
Actually, it was the navigator.
The navigator started it?
He was doing the communication. He's the one that told us, we're losing altitude. We may not make it. We have to make a decision. Are we going to try to make it, or do we ditch in the channel? It was the navigator tell us that.
How did you feel about those 2 options?
I don't remember, but I was probably scared shitless. You know?
So the navigator says that.
Yeah.
And then what does your pilot say?
Well, he said, let's take a vote. Mm-hmm. We took a vote. It was unanimous. We're going to stick together one way or another. We're going to make it or not make it, but we're not ditching in that cold channel. We're not going to lose those two guys for sure.
Right.
So as it turned out, those two guys went to the hospital. They never came back to the war, but they both lived. They both lived. And if we had a ditch in that channel, they wouldn't have lived.
So that was really the decision point. Because you guys can ditch in the channel. You know the water's cold.
Very cold.
You don't know how long it's going to take for someone to find you.
Right.
And because of their injuries, you guys were convinced they wouldn't survive.
They wouldn't survive. They won't survive in that cold water. And they couldn't help themselves. They were unconscious, you know. So he said they won't make it.
So the other eight of you risked your lives.
We voted.
You voted, and your decision was basically to risk your lives on the chance that you might not make it over the cliffs in order to save those two.
Yeah, and also the ditching in the channel wasn't a real safe thing to do, you know.
Right.
We could have died there too, but we elected, no. And all eight guys started praying. All eight guys started praying. That's why not only my mother's prayers, but other places. I am a strong believer in prayer. I'm a strong believer. Now, God doesn't always answer our prayers, Paul. He doesn't always answer our prayers. Here a month ago, I was in severe pain. I was having terrible, terrible pain. And I prayed to the Lord to take me home. Take me, Lord. Please take me right now. He didn't do it. You know why? Because I still had work for him to do. So I believe in prayer. But your prayers are not always going to be answered, but most of the time they will be. Okay. Yeah. I preached enough today to you. Okay.
So, again, I'm trying to imagine being you.
Yeah.
You've got this girl back home.
Yeah.
Who you've told if you make it back, you're going to marry her.
Yeah.
And now you're over the English Channel.
Yeah.
Praying
yeah.
that you can clear the White Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah.
Are your eyes open?
I don't know what I was doing. You know, you don't stop and think about it. I know we start praying. We start praying, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, what do you do? Either it's yes or no, you know. So we'll see what happens. Take our chances with it. Because when you're in a war zone, when you're in a real war zone, you know your chances are you're not going to come out. You know that. But you hang on and do the best you can day by day. And are thankful for each day. But, yeah, most of us made it back, but a lot of us didn't. It's war.
And on that mission, you're telling me the margin of making it or not making it was that you were so close to the top of those cliffs, you could see the bird nest.
I could see the bird nest. That's pretty close.
So when you guys did touch down safely, what do you do?
I think we yelled and screamed and shouted happiness. I'd say, I don't remember, but we were happy. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they came out with the ambulance to get the wounded guys. And so on. So, you know, there again, 75 years ago, I don't remember, but I know I had to be very happy. I had to be very happy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then it wouldn't be long till you have to go right back out and do it again.
Yeah, that's right. 2 or 3 days and get another airplane. Here we go. Getting those 30 missions in, you know. We'd fly 2 or 3 missions a week as a rule. It's not easy going into a war zone. War is not good. War is not a very good thing.
Well, and I'm curious, too, again, knowing what a young man you were.
Yeah.
How did you handle it when guys you knew didn't come back?
You felt very sad for them. You know, you grieved for them. And I think you probably felt lucky it wasn't you. It could have been me, but it was them. So it wasn't my turn.
There was another situation where your plane was shot up and had to make a forced landing.
In Belgium.
What do you remember about that mission?
I remember when we were getting ready to land, the navigator said, we're landing in enemy territory, so we'll probably be taken as prisoners of war. And then he got on the radio, and he said, wait a minute. Patton came through here this morning. He swept through here and kept going. We are not in enemy territory. So that was a good feeling.
And what necessitated that landing? What happened to the plane?
Oh, boy. I don't know, we were shot up. I guess we were shot up, you know, losing engines. We had to make a forced landing. We had to land. We were losing altitude again. We had to land.
Mm-hmm. And so you guys are all preparing.
To be prisoners of war.
Is that something you had considered before, that was a possibility?
No. I know that I wore a .45 pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were forced down, you're out in the fields of Germany. Those German farmers would kill you with pitchforks. They hated American pilots. So your best bet, if you're going to be forced down, was like my Pete Chamberlain. He came down on the Gestapo headquarters. So they didn't kill him. They made him a prisoner of war. But if he had landed out in the field, a farmer could have killed him with a pitchfork.
And he's a navigator that you had flown with.
Oh, yeah.
But the plane he was on, the Wicked Witch, got shot down.
It was a different airplane, yeah.
And you thought he was gone.
We didn't see any parachutes. But he didn't have the kind you had to pick up and put on. His was on his back. So when he came conscious, you know, we were flying at 30,000 feet. Mm-hmm. So when he came conscious, maybe at 10,000 feet, he knew enough to pull that ripcord. You know, it's that close.
Mm-hmm.
But if he hadn't had his parachute on his back, he wouldn't have made it because his parachute couldn't have been picked up. So that's how close those things are.
And when did you find out that he had made it?
I didn't know till after the war. He sent me a letter.
And you assumed he had died?
I assumed he was gone. He sent me a letter. I owed him money.
Back from the grave to collect his money.
I think I owed him $20 or something. He was kidding, you know. He said, I want to let you know I did make it. I did make it. And he told me this story. Well, that's interesting, huh?
That had to be quite a feeling to get that letter.
Oh, it was. I was so elated. He was such a good friend of mine. Very nice guy, yeah.
So that could have been your experience.
Yeah.
As you guys are coming down in territory that at the start of that day belonged to the enemy.
Yeah. Well, we were over enemy target, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So.
But as you're landing, he gets that radio communication that it's now American-held territory?
While we were landing, the navigator got that message.
Mm-hmm.
That, hey, we're in safe territory. Patton swept through here this morning.
And wasn't your brother serving under Patton?
He was truck driver for him, yeah.
Uh-huh. We were talking about Pete Chamberlain. I'm sure you met a lot of memorable guys during those years.
Yeah.
You're one of the last ones left now.
I have to be at my age. I have to be, right?
And most of us listening weren't alive for those years, didn't live through what you lived through.
And a lot of those guys were 3 or 4 years older than me, too, you know.
Well, what I wonder is, what should the rest of us know about them? What kind of people were they? What were they all about?
They were Americans. They were Americans fighting for their country. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
We were Americans fighting for our country. That's why we can't stand this crap that's going on now. Because men lived and died for this country, that we would have our freedom. And now they're trying to take it away from us. So, yes, we were proud. We were proud to be American warriors, to be American soldiers. We were proud. Because we were fighting for our country, and we knew it. So we knew the price could be high, but we loved our country. We loved our country then like people don't love it today, and it's a shame.
Mm.
But we loved our country. The women went to work in aircraft factories and became Rosie the Riveters. Everybody did something. Everybody did something to cooperate and help win this war. And we won it. We won the war. But it wasn't easy. But we were Americans, and we fought for our country.
And you mentioned the women going to work, Rosie the Riveters.
Yeah.
One of those Rosie the Riveters was Paula Jean.
Yes, she was.
What did she do?
She worked on making aircraft, in Santa Monica. Riveting, making airplanes, putting airplanes together for us. The whole country was cooperating. Not like today. Then, everybody was united. We were united. It was an effort that we all took part in.
Including some of Hollywood's biggest stars. When we come back, find out which famous actor flew for a while with Lou's bomb group and the special item Lou carried with him on all 30 of his missions. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.